Yeah, it was a book that these Council on Foreign Relations guys wrote in 1962, and they said to control the world, we should scare them with an environmental panic. Then if we tell everybody, you know, the world's going to end because of environmental problems, then we could usher them into a world government and Big Brother. So that, you know, that's maybe a part of the global warming scare is a propaganda for that.
Today we're joined by a special guest, Doug Sirignano, author of American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups, now available on Amazon, Audible, and such. I've got links in the show notes, IlluminatiWatcher.com, you can find links. This is an interesting conversation. We get into a little bit of everything. Donald Trump. How can we not talk about Donald Trump? Come on. Vaccinations, which gave us AIDS, apparently, maybe. Media control, 9/11, you know, old hat conspiracy stuff. Pearl Harbor, Martin Luther King, JFK. Are the elections rigged? Can we trust the election process? Well, then we're going to talk about some of the stuff in his book, of course. Noam Chomsky's in the book. Jim Mars, maybe you've heard of him. Talk a little bit about climate change, flat earth. We don't agree on everything. I'll tell you that up front. We kept it real amicable. Actually, like Doug. Doug, he's been on a lot of shows. I'm surprised he joined us. Because this is a busy guy. He's been on Alex Jones. He's been on Tinfoil Hat with Sam Tripoli. You know Tinfoil Hat. You can check out his website, AmericanConspiriesAndCoverUps.com. He's got an Instagram at American Conspiracy Theory and a Twitter at US_conspiracies. And without further ado, let's just get into it. All right, we got Doug on the line here. Doug Sirignano, author of American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups. How you doing, Doug?
Doing good. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. I actually wanted to get you on because I've got back in May of 2019... the Patreon supporters, what topics they wanted me to cover, and they hit me with a lot of good topics, and I want to give them good responses, and I've been, you know, researching all the little topics, and one of them that came up, Joe asked about information on the links between entertainment, government, the military, the education system, and you have written a book that I feel covers a lot of these topics, of course, called American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups. I think we can address some of these ideas behind this supposed umbrella Illuminati group and the revolving doors between all of these, you know, facets of society, false flags, etc. And I do want to kind of go into some of the material here, but before we get into the book, I always like to kind of get to know the people a little bit. You know, like, what inspired you to go down this path? How deep down the rabbit hole are you?
Oh, well, I think pretty deep. You know, I grew up in the 70s, and like a lot of people in the 70s were like questioning the establishment. And then, like, in 1979, I started getting this underground newspaper. I think it was actually the publication of the John Birch Society, and I think they get a lot of things right. And they talked about how, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations Trilateral Commission controls the government, how, you know, the central banks like Federal Reserve are privately owned, they charge too much interest, it's a bad system, and how the Big Brother, the international bankers want a Big Brother government to the United Nations. You know, all the, but then with the advent of the internet, you know, all that information came out even more, so I got into it even more. So, and I think, you know, I've read Jim Mars's books, he goes pretty deep down the rabbit hole. So I think I'm pretty deep in knowledge of the Illuminati.
Yeah, Jim Mars, he's you know, he passed away what, maybe a year ago now, something like that.
I think it was 2 years ago, about two. Yeah,
because he obviously very influential in this conspiracy world, and he's featured in your book. Is that right? Like you interviewed several different prominent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I did. I interviewed like some of the most famous conspiracy theory authors in the world, Jim Mars and G. Edward Griffin, Noam Chomsky, the famous professor. I got David Ray Griffin on 9/11. And I got one of Lyndon Johnson's lawyers about the Kennedy assassination. But Jim Morris, I think he was the most famous conspiracy theory author in the world. And I interviewed him about, you know, the theory that the New World Order wants to have a big brother government. That's what I interviewed him about. And he gave me a good recommendation for my book, Mr. Morris, too.
Oh, great. Yeah. And Jim Morris, you know, he's an OG. I was shocked that his last book, my name was mentioned in there. He was talking about some symbolism of this, that, and the other. So that was a huge honor for me. I couldn't believe I splashed this guy's radar.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he's an OG in this world, in this game.
Yeah.
Now, before we get into the meat of this book, I would like to kind of, you know, there's a lot of different political ideas in this book, and I would be remiss if I didn't. I'm going to bring up something very controversial here. You know, Donald Trump, this guy is so divisive, and,
oh yeah,
you know, I've got my opinions on it, but like, I also get how in the conspiracy community, a lot of folks think like this guy's the savior. He's like the guy that's going to save us from the Pizzagate stuff and all this other stuff. And you obviously don't have to be, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or make you uncomfortable, but like, what do you think? Is there some traction to this idea that Donald Trump could be the savior of this whole thing?
Well, I sort of think, I hope that's true. And I you know, he's not a part of a political establishment. You know, doesn't go to Bilderberg meetings, doesn't go to Council on Foreign Relations. Usually any president who gets in there is being controlled by the New World Order, by the Illuminati. And Trump isn't, you know, he somehow broke through. And I think he is going against the New World Order. And I don't know how you feel, but you know, did you see a speech he made about a month ago at the United Nations? He said, you know, he says we need nationalism, we need patriotism, we're not going to give our sovereignty over to global organizations. You know, that was such an anti-New World Order speech. And, you know, he's fixing the free trade agreements that are trying to move us towards globalization. He's fixing them so jobs come back in. I think maybe Trump is not a part of the establishment, and I think there is a hope with him. I'm going to vote for him in November.
Yeah, he's a fascinating figure. I mean, like, and this is where I have a hard time because, like, a lot of the things that he does, I'm so, you know, appalled by. But then, like, you know, being a sort of conspiracy guy myself, I'm aware that there's media bias. There's an overwhelming push to, you know, demonize this guy. And whether that's justified or not, that's like kind of the big question for me. Because you bring up some good ideas here, man. It's like this guy is kind of the outsider. He's not part of that established system. And there's a lot of stuff about the economy that I don't understand. I don't profess to understand economics at all. I never took it in college. And there's a lot of stuff with these free trade agreements that, you know, you got to wonder. You got to wonder if there's some hype or not behind this guy, or if he's legitimately threatening the status quo Illuminati candidates.
I think, you know, so far he's doing the right things. Like, I think there's sort of a political enlightenment that came with the advent of the internet with shows like yours and Breitbart and Alex Jones. People came to see that, you know, there's a deep state and there's the media is propaganda. And I think Trump, when he first came out, I think he's a product of that, that good positive enlightenment that I think that's come from the independent nature of the internet. Like, he comes out and says vaccines can be dangerous, elections can be rigged, there's a deep state, the media is fake news propaganda. This is what this is all the things that people who listen to your show and who go to Breitbart.com and Drudge.com, this is what they believe. And so, you know, I think so far he's doing the right thing. Hopefully he doesn't get corrupted or go the wrong way.
Yeah, and that's curious. I've been putting a lot of thought behind the vaccinations stuff lately, and you know, it's very concerning. I don't know what the right answer is here with the vaccinations. I'm so, you know, I get how it works. But then I read so much stuff that talks about how they're really harmful and the data is skewed and there's a big agenda behind these things. Did you get into any of the vaccination stuff in your research?
I did, actually. I wrote a book, might be the like most unique revelation, about how even the AIDS epidemic might have come from vaccinations. And you know, some people think the Illuminati is so diabolical. I don't know if you agree with this, that, you know, the rich elites who meet behind closed doors to manipulate the world is, they're so diabolical that they actually want to decrease the world's population. People think they put bad things in our food and water. And so there's evidence that they actually, there was a vaccine given out solely to gay men in 1979. And right after that, AIDS broke out there. And then there was a vaccination given out to Africans in 1979. So the thought is maybe the Illuminati is trying to kill us with the AIDS epidemic. But I think it's under control. But, you know, do you agree with that the Illuminati is so diabolical that they want to take actions like to make us unhealthy and decrease the world's population?
I think so, because I think that the, you know, the big agenda here is control. I think that they can sort of make us perform and behave at our worst if they induce enough anxiety and, you know, lack of good food or good health, and you keep people stressed out.
Yeah.
I think that keeps people distracted and unable to sort of like think about these higher concepts. And, you know, we all experience this. You know, you go to work all week and you're stressed out. You come home and like there's no energy to like dig into some of these philosophical arguments. You're just like, dude, just I'm turning on The Bachelor and zoning out or whatever, whatever, pick your poison. Yeah, so yeah, I think there's definitely an agenda to consider here with the Illuminati, with the idea that they do want us in poor health. I think they want to keep us sort of stressed out and uninformed so that they can further their agenda without us understanding what's going on, because you know, keeping us distracted allows to give them time to sort of do the things they want to do.
Yeah, even I think the control over the media, I think that's why a podcast like yours is a good thing, and because you talk about, you know, what you want to talk about. You're not controlled by the corporate media. I actually did an interview with Noam Chomsky, famous professor, about if the media is controlled. And I got this quote back in like 1926. John Hyland, the mayor of New York City, said, "These international bankers and Rockefeller Standard Oil interests control the majority of newspapers and magazines in this country." So I think that's another part of it. You know, a lot of the media is controlled. So thank God we got the internet and podcasts like yours.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a big, you know, I don't want to make a nefarious sort of prediction, but like I would guess that in the future, podcasts are going to go the way of YouTube videos, where there's censorship and there's a sort of someone deciding what reality is and what voices should be out there. And I don't know how they're going to do that, but I don't know how, you know, YouTube's gone that route. So how could they not affect podcasts as well?
Oh, well, I hope that doesn't happen, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look at Alex Jones. He got kicked off of iTunes for a bit, and he had an app or something that they kicked off because he was talking about the Sandy Hook stuff.
Yeah, he's been banned so many ways, right?
Yeah, right.
What do you think, Alex? I think he's I hear people criticize him, but I think he's still doing good work. What do you think of Alex Jones?
Yeah. You know, I used to listen to Alex Jones a lot more often. I haven't listened to him in probably 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, maybe even. You know, back then, even when I would listen to him, the guy was sensational, and that made it entertaining, and I think he was trying to be entertaining. But I've said it before, it's kind of like, he sounds crazy, but like a lot of the stuff he says turns out to be true. Like, the example I was given, the meme of him talking about how they're turning the frickin' frogs gay, you know, and people laugh at that and think he's just insane. And, you know, turns out he's right. Yeah. Turns out he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
So, Alex Jones. I think he's entertaining, if nothing else. I think he's a little extreme sometimes. I think he's a little dangerous. But, you know, that's the world of entertainment.
Yeah, one of the main reasons I think Trump got elected is so many people listen to Jones, and Trump sort of has the same ideas as Jones, that we shouldn't have globalization. I heard people criticize Alex Jones lately, but I don't know. I think he still does good work.
Yeah, and I'm on board with that, because I think globalization is an issue to be considered here. I think that globalization leads to greater control, you know? I think that's, you know, if we want to believe there is an Illuminati, I think that would be their goal.
Yeah. And with Trump in the free trade agreements, they were allowing companies to move overseas and where they could pay their workers less, and it was destroying employment in America. And Trump has fixed that, and jobs are pouring back in America. Hopefully, because he's not controlled by the corporate New World Order. You know, he's independent of that. So I think that's a positive thing there.
Right. Yeah, for sure. There's some good to be found there, and you know, I'm also a big proponent of the mainstream media being very deceptive and very manipulative. That's not to say everything they say is wrong, but there's definitely an agenda to, you know, they're there to make money. They're there to make money on ads and get your attention and get you scared and sell you products to fix the fear. So, we're in a weird state of flux for sure. That's one thing I do know. But now in this, go ahead.
You heard of that CIA Mockingbird program, right? Mm-hmm. That the CIA, back in the 60s, they wanted to infiltrate the media, and they get so many people who are connected to the CIA in top media positions. And I think that's why the media can't be trusted. I think that is true, you know, that the CIA is manipulating the media. And so that's why they're always slamming Trump. I mean, for a while, every time you open the newspaper, another bad story is out about Trump. I think the CIA is trying to take him down.
Yeah. It's very curious, isn't it? I mean, the CIA and the FBI, they've been involved with a lot of strange, you know, programs in the past, and we're supposed to believe that everybody's playing nice now. And, you know, and especially in your book, when you go through your book, and I read through maybe the first half, you got these big hitters in there. You got your Noam Chomsky's, you got your Jim Mars. And when I read the book, it felt like I was reading, Oliver Stone made a documentary series called The Untold History of America. And it basically, you know, you've probably seen it. It goes through sort of like a more skeptical view of what's happened in our history and how we've been lied to, essentially.
Yeah, really. I think so many ways that we've been lied to. You're the Illuminati watcher. Maybe the Illuminati has controlled the media for a long time, I think, and they pull the wool over our eyes in so many ways.
Yeah, and you make an interesting... There's an interesting part of the book here that I was reading, and it made a lot of sense to me, because an argument you always hear from the sort of normies that don't believe in any of this conspiracy stuff, they always, you know, specifically when you're talking about aliens, right? They say, well, there's just no way that you can keep something like that secret, right? You sort of unraveled the Manhattan Project, and you come up with some good points about how they were, in fact, able to keep things secret from the public. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The Manhattan Project was started in, like, 1941 or 42. They were building a nuclear bomb, and 130,000 workers were working on building that nuclear bomb, but they didn't realize they were building a nuclear bomb. It was kept a total secret from the Congress, from the public. And so that, like, proves that, you know, a big secret can be kept in the government.
Yeah, and that's kind of what David Icke talked about in his lectures, is the compartmentalization of the pyramid and keeping people only really knowing what happens, like, one level above them and one level below, so that no one gets the full sort of picture of what happens. And that's exactly what, I believe it was Bob Lazar was saying, that with the Area 51 stuff, was like, every scientist was working a different sort of system, and no one was able to, you know, share information with the other groups about what was happening.
I think ultimately the Illuminati want to have a world, Big Brother government through the United Nations. So the guys at the top of the Council on Foreign Relations and whatnot, they know that they're trying to get the Big Brother, but then they might spread the word to the people below, you know, that, you know, the United Nations is a good thing. If we surrendered our sovereignty, that would be for the peace of the world. And the people below them, they believe that. They don't really understand that the people on top are trying to get the Big Brother. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, most definitely. Now, in the book, you go through a bit on 9/11. What's your take on 9/11? This is a huge topic, right? But you know what? What's your thoughts on this thing?
Well, I interviewed, like, the most well-known author who believes that 9/11 was an inside job, David Roy Griffin. Might be one of his last interviews because he's getting old and he broke his hip and whatnot. You know, I think it was basically the neocons, they wanted an excuse to take military control of the Middle East, and they couldn't do that without a new Pearl Harbor. They even said that in one of their papers. We need a new Pearl Harbor so we can take military control of the Middle East. So, you know, I think it was an inside job. There's a lot of intrigue to it. You know, I was just recently watching a video by Jesse Ventura. He did one on that about, you know, how the buildings couldn't have come down unless there was bombs in them, how all the firemen heard the bombs going off, how they saw bombs in the basement, you know. So there's a lot of intrigue to it. I think the interview I did was pretty good with David Roy Griffin. I think they did it to take military control of the Middle East. There might be some other reasons.
Yeah. Now, that's a curious idea because when I research 9/11, there's a ton there, right? Like, I'm with the camp of I don't know exactly what happened. I just know that what we're told cannot possibly be everything. For reasons right or wrong, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of secretive things that happen and, you know, national security, this, that, and the other. But what's curious to me, you talked about the explosives thing. I've seen the documentaries. I've read through some of the pros and cons. And, you know, you get experts and engineers on both sides of the argument. So a guy like me who doesn't know how you blow buildings up and demolish them, what am I left to think? I got an expert saying this. I got an expert saying that. And this is what I think it was Carl Sagan was warning us about with technology, is the idea that as time goes on, information and technical expertise will be divided out and scattered so much that people are going to kind of – people that aren't in that sort of career field or whatever are not going to know what to think. And, you know, and then we live in this sort of post-truth age, which I'd argue we're already in right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if I ever heard a scientist give a scientific explanation as to how the buildings could fall the way they did without bombs inside it. I think the most logical scientific explanation is that there had to be bombs inside the building. Plus, a lot of people heard bombs going off. Plus, a professor found thermite at the bottom of the pile, which is the chemical composition of bombs. So I think the best scientific evidence is that there were bombs.
Yeah. And what I've read for like the sort of debunk of that would be that, you know, this is, you know, I don't know how many floors it was, 150 floors, whatever it was, World Trade Center was, you'd have to run dead cord all the way up this damn thing. And to think that no one, you know, the argument is, well, you know, people would have noticed people, you know, demolition teams putting explosives up and no one said that, you know. But well, maybe, right? Maybe people wouldn't know what the heck's going on.
Well, there are people who say that there was construction going on in the building in the weeks before. Yeah, and, you know, one thing people bring up is, you know, who's in charge of the security for the building? So this is, you know, you can take this one way or another, but who was in charge of security? The president was George Bush's cousin and George Bush's brother. So, you know, people look at that and say, oh, that proves it, but maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
Huh, interesting.
Oh, did you ever hear that before?
No, I haven't. Yeah, like I said, the 9/11 stuff happened pre woke days, and I never formally sat down and sort of researched it. I just started doing that back in August of 2019. There, you know, last year. I thought, you know what, I should do a show on September 11th. That's obviously a huge topic in the conspiracy world, and I started researching it, and you know, realized how it was such an expanding rabbit hole that. Now it's like sort of like this background project I've been compiling notes on. So no, I haven't heard that yet. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess you know about the Freemasons. You know a lot about that, right?
Yeah. I follow more.
Is there something that the Freemasons, they want a final Armageddon World War III between the Judeo-Christian and Muslim nations? So maybe 9/11 was trying to bring us towards that. Is there something like that?
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, there's this idea of sort of ushering in, you know, the new age Luciferianism stuff. There's ideas of mass sacrifice to some kind of, you know, pagan god, some kind of entity in another dimension. I mean, it's all over the place. You know, but yeah, with 9/11, I always just go back to how odd this is, because the you know, we're told that back when it happened, we're told, oh my god, these terrorists, the Muslims want to kill everyone, and they're not afraid to die for the cause, and this has been going on for hundreds of years, and get ready for the big, you know, holy war and all that, and then it kind of just stopped. And what are we supposed to believe, that these people that are willing to die for the cause, that's the official story here, like they just ran out of those, or they couldn't think of any other ideas? I mean, like, it's, to me, it seems weird, because like if I'm a legitimate, you know, terrorist or whatever, and I wanted to cause mass damage, like, that's fairly easy to do. You know what I mean? Like, get into the water supply. I mean, there's a million things you could do, and that essentially they just stopped after the one big attack.
Well, there were other shootings, you know? There was a lot of Muslim terrorists going around doing shootings. I don't know. Has that tapered off since Trump has been in office? It seems like there haven't been a lot of these. When Obama was in there, I think every month another Muslim terrorist would shoot people, right?
Yeah, then you have like the ones driving through the crowds and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you had the guy in New York with the in his car that they foiled that. But I mean, if you're talking about making like a massive scene, you remember, you know, they were trying to say like that the anthrax was going to be the big thing right after 9/11. They were talking about anthrax and all the letters, and then I remember them talking about how easy it would be just to put anthrax in the water supplies, you know.
Oh yeah.
And if you're a terrorist, like, you could do that and not even get caught. You don't even have to die for the cause, you know. And I just there's something about it that doesn't add up to me. And like I said, like, maybe there's something we're not being told for national security reasons. Maybe not, though, too. Like, I'm just saying, like, something doesn't feel right. Like, not everything adds up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what with your book, that's kind of, it kind of supports that, that sort of line of thought. Like, you go through Pearl Harbor. I mean, Pearl Harbor, is that a false flag?
Yes. Oh yeah, that's the first interview in my book about the evidence that that Franklin Roosevelt let Pearl, who was the president when Pearl Harbor happened, he let Pearl Harbor happen to give us an excuse to get into World War II. And then, as it happened, the last interview in my book was about what people think is a new Pearl Harbor, 9/11. But did you ever hear that stuff? There's a lot of good evidence that they let Pearl Harbor happen. I mean, there was a spy there right in Pearl Harbor, spying on the ships, and Japanese spy sending messages back, and we were intercepting him. He was telling Japan government, we're ready to attack here. And then those were being intercepted, and Roosevelt knew about it. So yeah, Pearl Harbor could have been another false flag. That was the first interview in my book.
Yeah, I remember reading through some of the ideas there, and it seems so obvious. But you know, just like Vietnam with the name escapes me. The
Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, Gulf of Tonkin with McNamara. Right. McNamara in the 90s come out and was basically saying, yeah, it was a false flag. I mean, it seems weird how we're told one story, and you're a crazy conspiracy theorist if you think that that's not the truth. And then, you know, you wait 30, 40, 50 years, and then they say, well, yeah, that turns out that wasn't true. And and no one makes mention of it again, you know? Same with Martin Luther King. I think you've got something about Martin Luther King in here, don't you?
Yes, I do. I interviewed a guy who was named William Pepper. He was one of Martin Luther King's friends. And in 1999, he sued this guy. He claimed he's part of a conspiracy. And the information came out that also the U.S. government apparently was involved with Martin Luther King's assassination. Because, you know, in 1969, Martin Luther King, although he preached peace, you know, there were riots and fires all over America here, and the government felt that Martin Luther King was leading that revolution. So I think they want to sign on some. So, yeah, there's good evidence that seems like the government killed Martin Luther King, and that's something that I think J. Edgar Hoover and the CIA would be very capable of, you know?
Yeah, and that would make sense, because if you look at the FBI COINTELPRO stuff, they were definitely interested in shutting down movements like Martin Luther King. I think they were trying to spread, you know, I don't know if it was truth or lies about him having affairs to try to discredit him and break up all his movements. And then, you know.
Yeah, and that's FBI. Yeah,
yeah, and then he gets killed, and then we got a day named after him, and like they want to act like, oh, yeah, you know, this is a great guy the whole time. And it's like, well, that's not really what your boys were doing, you know, and you know, the other huge figure, of course, JFK, arguably the sort of the biggest moment of creating and birthing conspiracy theories all over the world. You know, JFK's, that's a mega rabbit hole, right? Jim Mars went into that pretty deep. I think it was called Crossfire.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think of JFK?
In my book, I interviewed a guy who was one of Lyndon Johnson's lawyers, and he says Lyndon Johnson was a mastermind of JFK's murder. And I don't necessarily believe that, but I think Lyndon Johnson would have been a part of it. He was a lot more corrupt than we think. But this guy says that he was a mastermind. His name is Paul McClellan. He was one of Johnson's lawyers. But I think more Johnson was a part of it. I don't know if he's a mastermind. Mm-hmm. But there's so much intrigue to the Kennedy assassination. You can read so many books about it. You know, what mafia guys that were there, what military guys were there. It's a deep rabbit hole, and it's, like, endlessly intriguing.
Yeah, yeah, the JFK thing is, you could spend a lifetime reading about that. Same with Charles Manson, too. Like, they're just these mega rabbit holes with 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything. It's pretty maddening, honestly. Now, you were talking about Johnson. Of course, he would have a vested interest in JFK getting assassinated. I do want to talk to you about elections and rigging elections. You've got a section on this, and given the history of like the 2000 Gore Bush debacle, and then you know, Trump even in 2016 was saying how the election was rigged. That was before he found out he won. Then we've got this recent Iowa caucus situation. I mean, please tell me, can we trust this voting process?
Yeah, right. Well, I think if you read my interview I did, we can't trust it. I interviewed Bev Harris. She wrote the book, I forget the name. But Bev Harris, she's like the leading expert. She wrote Black Box Voting. Hmm. She's like the leading expert on if elections can be rigged and whatnot. And she says it happens a lot more than we think, you know. And I talked to her there about the evidence about how Bush and the Republicans probably stole both elections. But she says, you know, the Democrats do it as much as the Republicans, you know. And if you read that interview, you see that the rigging of elections probably goes on a lot more than we think.
Mm. Yeah, that's to me, is going to be a huge thing going on in this 2020 election. You know, 4 years ago, like I said, Trump was talking about how the thing was rigged before he found out he won. And, you know, if you watch Real Time with Bill Maher, he thinks that 2020, Trump's going to, you know, if Trump loses, that Trump will be doing the same thing. He'll say, well, it was rigged. And then we're going to have this huge sort of battle of trying to decide how to determine what reality is and if the new president should take over, or if Trump's going to declare, you know, martial law, executive order, dictatorship. So I think, I'm concerned for sure about the voting thing, because they always say a good democracy has trust in the voting system. You raise some interesting ideas here.
Yeah, and they, in the interview, her name's Bev Harris. She's like the leading expert on this. And she talks about a ways that we can have fair elections. There's ways to do it to make sure the machines are working, or to count the votes hand by hand afterwards. But it's definitely something we have to be aware of, I think, you know. There's a lot of evidence that elections are, and that's been going on for years in America. Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think about, so you've got a section with Noam Chomsky, maybe the most sort of famous person you interviewed here. And I think this would be a good time to sort of address specifically what Joe was asking me about, this umbrella Illuminati group, revolving doors of the groups and false flags, the links between entertainment, government, military, education, you know, because your section with Chomsky, that talks about like sort of big business intermingled with politics. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And I think Chomsky's main point is that, like, the same corporations that own the media also, like, lobby and control the president and the congressman. So this big corporate network is going to be the ones controlling the media and the government. So, yeah, you really can't trust it. And as far as the overarching connections between everything, I think a lot of it might come from the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a New World Order think tank created in the 1920s. If you look at education, if you look at big corporations, if you look at politicians, so many of them belong to this Council on Foreign Relations. And people say the purpose of the Council on Foreign Relations is to move us towards globalization. You know, it's Illuminati, what a New World Order. So I maybe that's, if you're a viewer wants to look in Council on Foreign Relations and the pervasive influence it has, maybe that's how everything's being connected.
And is the CFR affiliated with or similar to the Bilderberg? I mean, is this the same group of people just under different names?
I think the same people who belong to the CFR also go to the Bilderberg group. Yeah.
And they're also the same people going to this Bohemian Grove, you know, annual get together.
It's like secret societies, you know, meeting in secret, and that's where the control is coming from. I guess they want more and more power, and ultimately they want to have a big brother world government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea, I guess, would be, like, for instance, and we can talk about this idea of cancer cures and stuff too. The idea of our health industry, you've got, and this could flow into vaccinations. You've got the same company that are the same sort of people that write the books on healthcare are affiliated with the colleges that are teaching the doctors, and arguably they have ties with big pharma. So, like, essentially you've got the people making money off of vaccinations writing the literature that teaches these doctors, and then you ask the doctor, well, are vaccines safe? And they're going to tell you what they learned in the school funded by big pharma.
Yes. I think that's basically how it works, really. So, and then I think I talked about that. I did an interview about cancer with a guy named Dr. Ralph Moss. He's like one of the leaders on alternative treatments for cancer. And he talked about, when was it? Oh, maybe back in the 20s. The Rockefellers actually funded this group that was responsible for funding the most important universities. And the Rockefellers owned pharmaceutical companies. And so they were controlling the medical establishment, you know, to push drugs and to push chemotherapy. And you're right. I think it's there's a control that's going on from behind the scenes with that.
With the ultimate end game of what, do you think? I mean, is it just to get people sick? I mean, what would their interest be in doing this?
Well, they want control, right? And I think you know that the ultimately plan of the Illuminati is to have a big brother government, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the ultimate plan, so they want to, you believe. And the way they want to have that, you know, some people say that's crazy conspiracy theory, but if you look into Agenda 21, the United Nations program, it's a specific program that we're all eventually going to have to go live in the United Nations facilities because otherwise we're going to be destroyed by global warming. We have to be controlled by the police force of the United Nations and not use cars, not use air conditioners otherwise. So that's the ultimate plan, to get us to Big Brother, I think. And that's, you know, what Adam Weishaupt wanted ever since 1799, right? Mm-hmm. To get to Big Brother. And so, I don't know, do you think global warming is for real, or do you think it's propaganda to get us accept Agenda 21?
So, like, when I research the climate change stuff, and this is where this is my struggle of being this sort of conspiracy guy. with a little bit of knowledge of science. Like, I read through the science and the data on the climate change stuff, and to me, I agree with it. I do think that there's some man-made elements to the climate change. Now, how radical does our response need to be? That's where I think they use a little bit of fear-mongering. Ultimately, I think even if they're not 100% accurate on their data and their outcomes, I don't see the harm in moving towards renewable energies over fossil fuels. Ultimately, like, I'm a supporter of the idea of trying to get off fossil fuels, because I mean, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff that comes from that, you know, terrorism included.
Oh yeah.
Because we're funding all of these sort of rogue, you know, people. Now to say that there's no deception or agendas hidden in there would be a little naive too. Like, I think there's people that want to monetize off this, so it gets a little dicey. And it goes into like veganism, right? Like, veganism is a big sort of conspiracy thing too. And I'm of the camp that I do eat meat. I do think people are healthier eating the meat. But I'm against factory farming. I'm against cruelty to animals. I try to eat less meat. Some of the vegans are a little more radical about it. And you hear about this, I don't remember her name. There's some billionaire vegan person who she's got this goal of making all these documentaries to persuade people how evil, to persuade people how the evils of the meat. I kind of live in both worlds with the climate change and the veganism stuff, where like, I get it and I think there's some truth in there, but I think there's people that start muddying the waters a little bit, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh, you really looked into it. I mean, I think you're onto something.
Yeah. And that's where I have sympathy for people on both sides of the argument. You know, it's like, I get how some people can look at this stuff and say, well, no, it's all just a big conspiracy. And, you know, because NASA's behind a lot of the data. And, you know, I don't trust NASA. I mean, you know, NASA's got a fair amount of sketchiness to them. So, you know, but ultimately I go, you know, the same argument for veganism is the same argument for climate change, where it's like, well, even if we're being manipulated, you know, there's some good to be had there, is kind of what I ultimately
on.
Because it's like, we can't be paranoid and think every single thing we read is a conspiracy, right? I mean, that's a sad life to live.
You know, like, I don't know if this makes sense. The conspiracy, the truth movement, do they generally accept global warming or not? I don't, you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. I think the general consensus from the truth community is to not believe in the global warming stuff, to not believe in the climate change, that it's... And I've never seen enough evidence to support that. It's kind of like flat earth, right? Like, I get what they're saying. Like, you got to question authority, but like, there's only so much, like, you would have to have every pilot that ever flew a plane in on the flat earth conspiracy, you know, like, it just doesn't make sense. You know, like, I get what they're saying.
I haven't looked into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Flat earth's actually,
I haven't looked into that flat earth. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I
did. One thing.
Go ahead.
I talked to Jim Mars a little about that, and you know, I think it's back in 1962. These members of the Council on Foreign Relations, they had a meeting how to control the world if there's not going to be wars, because they thought Kennedy was going to bring peace to the planet. So they decided you could control the world if you scared them with an environmental panic. It's called the did you hear the report from Iron Mountain?
No, what's that?
Yeah, it was a book that these Council on Foreign Relations guys wrote in 1962, and they said to control the world, we should scare them with an environmental panic. Then if we tell everybody, you know, the world's going to end because of environmental problems, then we could usher them into a world government and Big Brother. So that, you know, that's maybe a part of the global warming scare is a propaganda for that. But then, as you said, part of it is probably true. We probably shouldn't clean up the planet here and there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I haven't heard that before. You know, it's like, I always say it, but, you know, these conspiracy theories, they usually turn out to be true. I'm definitely not, I'm definitely not like a firm hardcore on any one specific idea. Like when people ask me to research flat earth, I didn't believe flat earth at all. But I researched it with open mind, and you know, some of their ideas were interesting, but ultimately I come to the conclusion that I don't buy into that sort of thing. But yeah, maybe, right?
All right.
I'll have to look into that. Now,
yeah, it's called, yeah.
Go ahead. What's it called?
The report from Iron Mountain. I talked to Jim Mars about that. He believes that we don't have to worry about global warming for another 100,000 years. That was his opinion.
Interesting. Yeah, and what I look at is, like, I go back to the, you know, they say that the Earth heats up in cycles, and you can look at that graph of CO2 over 800,000 years. You can see it clearly goes on cycles. But you can see that since, like, you know, the 1900s, it sort of exponentially increases and sort of goes off the charts. It depends on how you interpret the data, right? And that's why, like, science has its trickery. Like, I always am skeptical of science because not that I disbelieve in science, but I always question the people interpreting the data, providing the results, and telling you what to believe. Because, you know, I've researched health and nutrition for a fair amount of time, and it's like, you know, depending on who you ask as to what's healthy for you, like, you'll get a million different answers.
Yeah.
Okay, so looks like we're running out of time here. I do want you to share with the listeners, where is the best place they can pick your book up?
All right, well, my website is the name of my book, American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups.com. Got to put a slash between cover and ups. And if you go there, there's a link to Amazon, so you can get on Amazon. And you can Google that or Google my name. So it's a good website. I got the pictures of all the guys I interviewed. I interviewed some of the most famous conspiracy theory authors in the world, and I got some excerpts from the book there. So I think it's a good website.
Yeah, it's a good looking website. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Are you on social media? Is there a place the readers can hook up with you?
Oh yeah, on Instagram, I'm American Conspiracy Theory on Instagram, and I'm doing Twitter, but I don't know if I'm going to continue because they shadow ban me. It's annoying. Yeah. But my Twitter is US/conspiracy.
Okay, and I'll link those US, in on the show notes too.
Oh, it's US-conspiracies. Yeah, that's it. All right.
Yeah, I go back and forth on my social medias too. Like, you know, one month I'm really into Instagram, the other month I'm really into Twitter, and I go back and forth. And some days I'm just like, I don't care about any of this. I hate social media. Well, anyways,
I think I'm annoyed. They shadow ban me on Twitter. I support Trump a lot, and then I send them out good tweets, and I don't think they're being shown to people. So it's annoying.
Yeah, for sure. And Facebook does, and Instagram do similar things where, and they try to say, well, that's because the way they make money is, you know, they want you to sort of pay to show your information to all your subscribers or whatever. But yeah, I think you and I both know that we live in a world of trying to create reality, and they do want to sort of censor what doesn't benefit them.
Yeah.
But hey, exactly. Thanks for taking the time to go over your book. It's fascinating. I'll put all the links in the show notes of where they can pick up the book, where they can find you on Instagram and Twitter.
Thanks a lot. It's been a great talking. You're not related to Adam Weishaupt,
right? No, I'm not. This is a poorly chosen pseudonym I chose roughly 9 years ago. Not realizing how embedded into the truth community I would be someday. And, you know, that's just the nature of it. Yeah, that's not my name at all. Just a curious play on words.
Oh, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot, Isaac.
Yeah, likewise, Doug. Well, there you go. What do you think? How'd you like that conversation with the great Doug Sirignano, author of American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups? You can check out his info, website, Instagram, Twitter's in the show notes, IlluminatiWatcher.com. Same place you can find all of my social medias and such. And check his book out on Amazon or Audible.
that hopefully cleared up some of the questions about how this whole tangled mess connects together. We got a little bit on a lot, right? A lot of different topics to cover there. Stay subscribed to the podcast. Lots of cool topics coming up. We're doing film analysis all over the place. So many for you. I actually wrote a book too. Yeah. I'm going to give you updates on that. I'm going to drop some shows on the Patreon feed only for the Patreon folks to express my gratitude for their support. I got a show coming up. I'm going to talk about my personal beliefs. Who am I? What do I believe? Stuff that I previously thought you should not care about. But maybe you care. And if you care, you can get it on the Patreon feed. I don't know when I'm going to drop it. April, maybe. Check out patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher for all the great things you can get. And stay subscribed. Like I said, we've got lots of cool film analysis coming up. Until next time, stay woke.